Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. There is a front in this war that is generally ignored, or if it's attended to at all, it's considered to be sort of beyond reproach. It is anything but. And that is something we owe a great debt of gratitude to our first guest, Claudio Rosette, for helping to make plain. I'm talking about the United Nations, and no one has covered that beat than has this superb investigative reporter, now a foreign policy fellow with the Independent Women's Forum, but also a columnist for Forbes.com and a blogger for PJ Media, and one of our regulars here, I'm very pleased to say, at Secure Freedom Radio. It's always a delight to have her with us, especially at a moment when there are big doings at the UN. So, Claudia, welcome back. Glad to have you.
Thank you, Frank. Great to be here.
Well, among the big doings is we now have a coronation underway of a new Secretary General, one Antonio Guterres. You have recently reported about him at PJ Media. Give us a quick background on Guterres, how he came to be the Secretary General of the United Nations.
Sure. Well, let me give you the headline I put on my PJ Media item about Mr. Guterres, which is simply, "For the next UN Secretary General, a managerially incompetent socialist," which is, on every count, really the last thing we need. Mr. Guterres is a former head of the Socialist International, which should concern us all because we actually don't really need more socialism. The record has been disastrous. You know, that should have been a lesson of the last century, and here we go again. He's a former prime minister of Portugal, and for the last 10 years, most until just last December, he was the head of the UN's refugee agency, the UNHCR, which sounds good. You know, the UNHCR enjoys a fairly good reputation. The problem with that is, Frank, that the closer you look at the UNHCR, the less deserved any good reputation is, and the more troubles come to light. It's a, again, it's another one of these very troubled UN agencies filled with problems, incompetence,
corruption. Let's unpack various pieces of this, Claudia, if we can, because I do think it's important to have clarity about the sort of ideological DNA of this new Secretary General. I've just been watching, and I commend to you and our listeners, as I will several times in the course of this program today, Trevor Loudon's new film called The Enemies Within, which talks prominently about the so-called democratic socialist movement and the socialist internationals, you know, various affiliates inside the United States and what they've been doing to subvert us from within for decades. But give us your perspective on not just the sorry history of socialism, democratic or otherwise, and how really ill-advised it is to be turning over an entity like the UN to someone imbued with those sentiments.
Sure. I mean, Frank, what is it that basically has made America a great country? And that is freedom reflected not only in our political system, our genuine democracy, but capitalism, free markets. They're part of the same thing in the end. Free markets let you choose. They produce, they allow the competition, they allow that in the private sector, gives real room for innovation, for invention, for the failure that is inevitable if you're going to have real success, for the incredible growth that this country has seen and bounty that we enjoy, which right now we're actually spending down because we have been departing from that system ourselves. We're becoming more and more a redistributionist country. You don't really hear people making a great case for capitalism anymore. There is a great case to be made.
Soak the rich, I think, is what we're hearing more often than not.
But yeah, exactly. And the real answer, it needs to be, let everyone have real freedom of choice and opportunity under a just system of law. Okay, where that system has spread, we've seen amazing things happen. You know, Hong Kong has been one of the great cases on a rock, thanks to a system that was basically capitalist, backed by British democracy for more than a century. You have one of the great miracles arise out of nothing. You know, rock and a harbor, that's what they had. And what you've seen in places that have gone socialist is stagnation, troubles, think Greece, think the problems that afflict Europe, think in the third world, real poverty, misery. You know, what was India's problem for generations before they finally began to pull it together and kind of begin to get out of it? And that was basically a mindset that said the government will decide what you need, what you should get, what's fair.
Statism.
And it leads
run amok.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, Claudia, let me pivot because we're going to run out of time, and I do want to make sure we talk about the refugee resettlement program. It's a little known fact, and one of our colleagues, as you know, Ann Corcoran, authored a very important booklet for us called Refugee Resettlement and the Hydra to America. And as I say, it's a little known fact that here in the United States, and I guess elsewhere too, the decisions about who will be brought into our country as refugees are actually made by the person in the position that, as you say, Antonio Guterres held until December, High Commissioner for Refugee Affairs. They do the vetting, but they also tell you who are eligible to be considered as refugees. And by and large, as I understand it, we wind up taking who they serve up.
Well, that's right. I mean, we, in theory, vet them once the UNHCR has picked, but they do the choosing, which is one of the reasons North Korean refugees running into China for years have found just nothing, because the UNHCR won't oppose the Chinese to actually do something.
And they will support the Organization of Islamic Cooperation in helping to migrate Hydra, as they say, Islamists.
Yeah, Nina Shea of the Hudson Institute had a very good op-ed in the Wall Street Journal recently pointing out that one of the things that the UNHCR under Mr. Guterres has been doing is, or has not been doing, they've been helping with the resettlement of Muslims from the Middle East in the United States, but not with Christians. We're seeing this tiny, tiny, basically, they're not sending Christians for resettlement.
Need not apply, as they say.
Yeah, are one of the seriously, seriously threatened groups in the Middle East.
Claudia, I'm told in part that's because the Christians are not able to survive in the UN-administered camps for refugees from whence these refugees are drawn. So, I mean, it's kind of a self-fulfilling deal where you can't be a refugee in one of those camps, therefore you can't be a refugee for the purposes of getting out of those countries, at least as far as the UN is concerned.
And Frank, part of the problem here is that the UNHCR is run in ways that are, like most of the, like the rest of the UN, opaque, badly managed in the bureaucratic sense, but also managed in their own sort of under their own set of ideological benchmarks. And
UN values, as they call them.
Yeah, what the average person sees is Angelina Jolie walking around next to Mr. Guterres talking sympathetically to a parade of refugees we don't actually meet. And it all looks good. You know, it looks like the sympathetic people are out there doing things for these refugees. Well, again, when you start to look close, what you're actually looking at is a situation where there are sort of decisions being made about who will actually have a chance and who won't, where you and I don't really hear about them until, say, Nina Shea writes about it in the Wall Street Journal. The UN doesn't really tell us.
Claudia, we have to leave it at that for the moment, but there is so much more to talk about. Your mastery of what's going on inside that facility on the East River in New York is second to none. Your insights at PJ Media and elsewhere are so appreciated. Thanks so much for joining us today. Next up, Jim Hansen joins us. We'll talk about this revelation from Hillary Clinton's emails that the Saudis are backing the Islamic State.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
If you listen to this radio station a lot, you may have noticed our brand new name. It's got a catchy ring to it. But there's more than that. The name actually tells you who we are and what we do in one word. It took us a while to come up with this, but we realized if there's one thing we want to be to DC listeners, it was this. We want to be your answer to everything, to what happened while you slept, to why am I stuck in traffic, to how do you get control of this country again. Big stuff and little stuff. This may be a tall order for one radio station, but we know we're up for it. AM 1260, The Answer.
Hi, I'm Tim McGraw. The men and women of the Air Force Reserve play a vital role in protecting us at home and abroad. They are your neighbors, whose dedication to our country and commitment to their communities call them to serve. Dedication, commitment, and service. It happens every day at home and around the world. They're your neighbors, making a difference.
Joel Klein catches a 7 o'clock train after his evening CPR class at the American Red Cross.
Ron Garrity's on the same train. He's had a rough day and doesn't feel like himself. Until he feels the sudden tightness in his chest, Ron never thought he'd actually have a heart attack.
Until Joel is administering CPR, he never thought he'd actually save a life.
When you train with the Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn about life-changing opportunities in your area.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. And particularly, I'm pleased to welcome our friend and colleague at the Center for Security Policy, Jim Hansen, our executive vice president these days, a Green Beret in a previous incarnation, a man of considerable expertise on both the kinetic and non-kinetic forms of the war for the free world, whose advice and counsel and friendship I value greatly. Jim, welcome back. Good to have you, as always.
Always a pleasure, Frank.
Hey, you've been thinking about and commenting upon some of the revelations that have been emerging from Hillary Clinton's emails and those of some of her associates like John Podesta. It's kind of a torrent of these things. It's hard to even keep abreast of them, let alone do justice to their strategic and other implications. But Jim, one caught my eye, and I think yours as well, and that was a statement by her to the effect that she acknowledges our so-called allies, the Saudi and Qatari governments, are enabling, funding, underwriting, supporting the Islamic State, in which they are supposed to be allies with us in taking down. What is that about? Were you surprised? Or what does it say about her and her willingness to look the other way, perhaps, at behavior that's unacceptable?
You know, if I was surprised, it was in the Casablanca way, where I was shocked that there was gambling going on in the casino. And again, I think the other thing is the Saudis also fund Hillary's campaign, so she's got a big issue here. And it seems to one of the other revelations was that, you know, she has a public and private policy. She says one thing when she's talking to the public and another in private or when she's talking to big donors. And apparently the Saudis do, too. You know, publicly they say they're against ISIS. Privately, they are one of the big funders and enablers of it. So all in all, there is a giant bowl of hypocrisy and dangerous hypocrisy. It'd be one thing if this was just politics. You know, this is global terrorism. This is the jihad being funded by people who ostensibly we're working with and who Hillary helped deepen our ties with, and especially our ties with the wrong parts. Not that there's a really good part of the Saudis at all. You know, that's been an ally we should have been more careful with for a long time. But she's got us in bed with the Muslim Brotherhood side of all the worst actors all through the Middle East, and this is a perfect example.
You know, Jim, I'm struck as you say that by the, well, pregnant question of to what extent was she encouraged in such, well, willful blindness at best and at worst, hypocritical behavior with respect to the Saudis by a woman who spent most of her youth and young adulthood in Saudi Arabia, who is at her right hand and has been now for some two decades, namely Huma Abedin. Do you think there might be some connection there?
I can't imagine there isn't. You know, I mean, given the proclivities of the Saudis to start with, given the fact that they are, you know, they vie with Iran for largest state sponsor of terror, largest proselytizer for global jihad in the world. And so they are doing this most certainly. Huma and her family have been deeply involved in enabling Muslim minority affairs. The idea that any place Muslims are as a minority, they have a plan to go ahead and move up the food chain and use their minority status. And then as more of them aggregate, they change tactics and move to other ways to push their agenda. So I can't imagine she's not the one whispering in Hillary's ear. And I keep waiting for the emails to drop. And I think there's a decent chance they will, that show this advice, that show these connections where Huma was the one. We know she was a conduit to these folks during Benghazi, you know, where she was reaching out and talking to them directly. And I can't imagine she's not for this.
One of the arguments that we hear that is prompting the Saudis to support this particular franchise, among many others, is that they're trying to prevent the establishment of a Shiite crescent in the Middle East that could pose ultimately a very direct threat to them, as well as other Sunnis in the region. Talk, if you would, about that, but also the revelations from this study done by the World Bank of some of the people who joined up with this black flag operation of the Islamic State in 2013, 2014, who turn out not to be poor, uneducated, or in despair, despite what we're endlessly told about them.
Yeah, it apparently ISIS is not the Middle East jobs program that Obama and the State Department under Hillary would have us believe. The idea that these poor, disaffected Muslims who just have, for no other Muslim reason, they just happened to be Muslim, were traveling there because they couldn't get jobs in their home country. As it turns out, the majority of them have at least a high school education and many beyond that, which is uncommon in most of those countries. That's a much smaller minority there than it is here or anywhere else in the West. And they do actually have an Islamic reason for being there. They're there for the jihad. It's the jihad, stupid. And this is something that I think it was painfully comical to watch the Obama administration trying to pretend that A, the Islamic State is not Islamic, and B, the people going there to fight and die in a holy war were actually just looking for jobs. They were, wannabe baristas who were looking for a Starbucks position somewhere in Syria. Wasn't the truth and was crazy. And to your other point about the issue with Iran and why that's going on, it's again, not painfully comical. It's just painful and dangerous to watch the Obama administration empowering Iran as the regional hegemon and then knowing that there's no way the Saudis are going to let that happen. There's no way the rest of the Gulf Arab states are going to tolerate that. So while they can occasionally make common cause, with the Iranians against the greater enemies, us and Israel, in the end, they know that that is a death cult that looks to wipe them out as much as anybody else. And we're going to pay the price when they start nuking up to face that threat.
Hey, Jim Henson, let me turn to one last topic with you quickly. Talking about Hillary Clinton's emails and particularly those that have been tumbling out via WikiLeaks, there's some evidence that WikiLeaks is a Russian information operation. The Director of National Intelligence has credited, if you can call it that, the Russians with hacking into the Democratic National Committee's server and so on. What do you make of the role the Russians are playing at the moment? Are they, in fact, in your judgment, interfering with our election to throw it to Donald Trump? Or is there something else going on? And more to the point, are we deterring this kind of behavior with the sort of policy stance the Obama administration has taken to date?
Yeah, well, I think it's reasonable to assume that the DNI doesn't make those claims without forensic evidence of some sort that shows a path back to Russian or Russian-controlled hackers. Now, the bottom line is those guys are operating in every way. The bulk of what they do is crime. Their main function is intellectual property theft over the internet to just purely make money, of which Putin and the rest of the oligarchs get their cut. But in the course of that, they also do an awful lot. I mean, they're hacking anything they can get to. A lot of it is automated. So it doesn't mean they necessarily targeted the DNC, although they could have. But they also could have just hit them because they had poor security. It's obvious, that Hillary and the Democrats are not the kings of online security. So if they got in there, the question is, what are they using that information for? And is it to get Trump elected, or is it just to disrupt U.S. politics and attack us overall? Both are equally reasonable, I think, as possibilities, and that's something they've been doing as long as I can remember.
Jim, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Thank you so much for the work you do at the Center for Security Policy. Next up, we'll talk with Diana West about more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
People from around the country have no clue what we're like here in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we've got our whack jobs like the guy who climbed the fence and walked around the White House. We have the people who see the black helicopters. But there's one common denominator for all of us, friends and family. And there's no place where relationship means more than it does right here. Yeah, we may be famous for the dignitaries, but friends and family, that makes us tick. And frankly, this radio station gets that. That's why I listen. AM 1260, The Answer.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney.
My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. It's been clear for some time that Western civilization is in peril in Europe. Now, a self-described formerly liberal Dutch academic, Machteld Z, explains why. Dr. Z has closely studied the nearly 90 courts in Britain that dispense justice in accordance with Sharia, Islam supremacist legal code. She found that the metastasizing of such courts is only partly due to the Islamists' energy in spreading their infrastructure and influence in the West. According to Breitbart News in her new book, Holy Identities, On the Road to a Sharia State, Dr. Z identifies the other chief culprit as, quote, useful infidels, unquote, who are, quote, helping conservative Muslims isolate Islamic communities and encourage them to be more religious and insular, unquote. In other words, Muslims become more Sharia adherent and infidels more submissive. We're next. This is Frank Affney.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. According to the New York Times, President Obama said during a rare visit to the CIA to discuss the second phase in the battle against ISIS on April 13th, that the U.S.-led coalition had momentum against ISIS and that ISIS fighters realize their cause is lost. But the previous day, the New York Times ran a story with the headline, ISIS expands reach despite military and financial setbacks, noting that although ISIS has suffered losses on the ground in Iraq and Syria, it has expanded its presence in northern Africa, Afghanistan, and Europe. There also has been little progress in stopping ISIS's efforts to recruit homegrown terrorists worldwide. The president is in denial about the threat from ISIS. His trip to the CIA, which should have occurred 5 years ago when the violence broke out in the Middle East, was little more than a publicity stunt. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. Diana West is in the house, longtime syndicated columnist and extraordinarily powerful blogger at dianawest.net, the author of two terrific best-selling books, Death of the Grown-Up and American Betrayal, a featured guest here at Secure Freedom Radio, I'm very pleased to say, each week at about this hour. Diana, thank you so much for joining us. It's great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, Frank.
You know, I was struck. Breitbart London had a piece yesterday, which I've commented upon elsewhere in the program, but I'd like to get your thoughts about it. It discusses a new book by a formerly leftist academic by the name of Dr. Machteld Z. in the Netherlands, entitled Holy Identities, On the Road to a Sharia State. And I don't know if you've had a chance to read the book. I have not, but I was very taken with the account that appeared here in the Breitbart London piece, but also at Gates of Vienna, an important online resource for the counter-jihad in Europe. Give me your thoughts, Diana, about the insights this woman took from her experience, apparently on the inside of Sharia courts in the United Kingdom.
Well, this is an unusual person because she went into this study as a leftist in sympathy with notions of multiculturalism, so-called, and integrationism and so on. And what she saw with honest eyes gave her a completely different understanding of the world, really. But of course, more importantly, the Islamization of Europe, specifically British Britain, specifically British law, which has now been completely undermined by this establishment of Sharia courts inside the United Kingdom.
Some 90 of them, I think, at this point, which operates side by side with English common law courts, amazingly enough.
Yes, I mean, this is the scandal of it, because this of course, is how it is done in terms of undermining a legal system that once upon a time recognized all citizens as equals. And now we see the Sharia courts coming in and separating the sexes, separating the religions in terms of treatment according to Sharia law. And this is something that I have not read the book. I've read about her. But the thing that's so extraordinary, really, is that she came to this from the other side, looked at the data, and came away a changed person. And this is unusual, and she is to be applauded for this.
You know, it reminds me of that old line, Diana, about a conservative being a liberal who was mugged by reality. This woman certainly seems to have had that experience in these Sharia courts in the United Kingdom.
Yes, and I would like to mention that there was a fascinating anecdote that Robert Spencer, our friend Robert Spencer, told long ago about speaking with another Dutch person, a Dutch minister in the Ministry of Integration. They have such a thing. And she was in charge of speaking with Dutch imams and so on. This is 10 years ago or more. So that's the period we're talking about. And he was asking her about how she related to the Islamic communities inside the Netherlands. And he asked her if she had read the Quran. I mean, this was this woman's job, to deal with the Islamic world inside Holland. And she said she had not. And the reason she gave him, and this is a quote, she didn't want to lose all hope. And this is something I wrote about in The Death of the Grown-Up, because it was so extraordinary to me. But so here you see someone who will not look at what they're dealing with, will not actually take the time, because there is this sense of losing all hope if they find out the truth, whereas this Machtel Z has actually gone into it, looked at the data, and rather than losing all hope at finding the reality, she wants to warn the world, and more power to her.
Among other things, Diana, and I don't mean to laugh at that anecdote, but it's so absurd and so frightening. But in part, she seems as though this minister would fit the bill of what Machtel Z calls the useful infidels, who are enabling this kind of penetration and subversion from within. Civilization jihad, as the Muslim Brotherhood calls it. You have not seen it, I guess, but I want to commend to you and our listeners a film that very much speaks to these points, these useful infidels in part, but also useful idiots, as I think Lenin used to call them, who've allowed the left and the Islamists to attack our country as well, as documented in a new film by Trevor Loudon, a friend of ours from New Zealand, a remarkable film called The Enemies Within. But Diana, knowing what you know of both Trevor's work and of the lay of the land here, how would you characterize the degree to which in this country, not just the Netherlands or Britain or elsewhere, but here we are confronting kind of a fifth column operating against us in this unholy alliance between the Islamists on the one hand and the left, the so-called red-green axis?
Yes, well, this has been something that we've been trying to chronicle and understand in all of these years since 9/11 at least. And again, going back to this extraordinary academic, Machtel Z, and some others that have actually come to the realization that there is a existential threat, the biggest problem, I still believe, is not these secret subverters who are working to extend Islam, to extend communism and other totalitarian ideologies that take down the American system, but these enablers. It is the enablers and the blind, whether we call them the useful idiots or what was Machtel Z's phrase that was so good, useful infidel. Yes, I mean, it's really a marvelous notion. This is where our real problem is, and it is not just on the left; it is on the right, and I think that is where we really see the terrible genius of subversion, because it is this goes back to the communist days, the Soviet practices of subverting all sides. And I think for too long, people who consider themselves conservative, center-right, look at the left as the only problem in terms of this subversion, whereas ideologically, it is across the spectrum where we see the terrible fruits of this relentless effort to undermine our principles, our morality, our understanding of who we are, what our government stands for, how to protect it, our civilization. And I, yes, and you know, that to me is really where the battle is, to open our eyes and try to understand what has happened to us across the spectrum, not just beating up on the left, not just beating up on the Obama administration, but looking at what the right has done and is doing to us at this point. And we see it very much, probably for another day's conversation, in this election cycle.
We do indeed, and I think it will be for another day, but we will come back to it. It is, again, something that is central to this Trevor Loudon film, The Enemies Within, as well. Let me ask you finally, Diana, though, about one other aspect of this, and in a way it speaks to the point you were just making about our own election, but we're now having accounts, notably from BuzzFeed, a new news source, primarily, I guess, aimed at millennials. But nonetheless, it has documented that nearly one half of those in a poll sampling opinion in 12 nations in Europe now are embracing what it describes as anti-immigrant, nationalist, extremist and authoritarian views. Give me very quickly your assessment of those views and what's animating them.
Well, I'd say it's the best news I've heard all week in terms of breaking through. And what you're seeing in the way the BuzzFeed is presenting it is an attempt to demonize this feeling of nationalism, this feeling of not wanting to cede one's nation to these onslaughts of immigration that are absolutely destroying the social fabric by importing all of the depredations that come with Islamic culture, the violence against women, the lawlessness, the parallel societies, all the things that Mactel Z was looking at in microcosm in the Sharia court system in Britain.
Diana, thank you so much for what you share with us at dianawest.net and through your books and appearances here and elsewhere. Keep it up, my friend. Come back to us again soon. Next up, we'll talk with Gordon Chang about the apparent imminent rupture between the United States and the Philippines at a most dangerous time for both countries. That and more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has in 2015 begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hello, I'm Ace Lyons. As a retired 4-star admiral who served as Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Pacific Fleet, is a special privilege for me to talk to you about an important new book just released by the Center for Security Policy, China Prepares for Conflict, and Why We Must Do the Same. The book explains that while the Obama administration has dithered over the deterioration of the Middle East and ignored Asia, China has been moving to challenge and displace the dominant role the United States has played in this region and the world since the end of World War II. I am one of 9 co-authors of this important book. The others are former Senator Jim Talent, Gordon Chang, Peter Navarro, Kevin Freeman, Bill Gertz, Frank Gaffney, Fred Flights, and Dean Chang. I explained in my chapter how China's efforts over the last 20 years to seize control of almost the entire South China Sea is an indication of new assertiveness to advance its regional dominance at the expense of the United States. I take issue with President Obama's benign neglect of the threat from China and how Beijing is building islands in the South China Sea that it plans to turn into stationary aircraft carriers to threaten freedom of navigation in this region. Like the other authors of this book, I believe the next president must act immediately to restore American leadership and its military power, both of which have been seriously undermined by the disastrous policies of President Obama. We urgently need to modernize and increase the size of our land, naval, and air forces to stand up to China and other adversaries worldwide. We also need to recognize and counter the growing cyber and intelligence threats from China. The bottom line is that our nation needs to act now. I strongly commend this important book, China Prepares for Conflict and Why We Must Do the Same. You can read it for free as an ebook on the Center's website, securefreedom.org, or you can purchase a copy on Amazon.com.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Back, joined by Gordon Chang, our duty expert on matters in Asia, the Pacific region more broadly, and specifically Communist China and what it is up to. Gordon comes to this distinguished position here with us at Secure Freedom Radio via his myriad books and appearances and speeches and all that have really distinguished him as one of the go-to individuals in our country on such topics, including his books, The Coming Collapse of China and Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. You can find his work, among other places, at The Daily Beast, Forbes.com, and World Affairs Journal. Gordon, welcome. Good to have you as always.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Hey, you caught my attention with some analysis that you've given on this fellow, Rodrigo Duterte. the Philippines, and what he seems to be doing that is exacerbating greatly relations with the United States at a moment that would seem to be, well, how should I say it, inopportune for both his country and ours in light of what China is doing, as you talk with me about each week in the South China Sea. Give us a sense of what's going on there and where this is likely to lead.
Duterte has been president of the Philippines since June 30, and ever since he took office, he has been trying to take down the Philippines' relationship with the United States. The U.S. is the only country that has pledged to defend Philippine territory, but Duterte is, I believe, genuinely anti-American. He has given notice that the joint exercises between the Philippine and American militaries will not take place. He has said some horrible things about President Obama and the outgoing American ambassador in Manila. He is trying to open up a relationship with both China and Russia. China right now is threatening to make permanent its seizure of Scarborough Shoal, which the China took in 2012, but which has yet to start to reclaim. And that would be a game changer, as we've talked about in the past. Duterte and a number of Philippine businessmen will be going to Beijing in a few days, and we're going to learn a lot more about the reaction of the China to what Duterte is doing. But we do know that the Chinese are going to encourage Duterte in terms of further undermining the relationship with the United States.
Yeah. It sounds as though there will be a bit of the good cop, bad cop going on here, Gordon Chang, in terms of, on the one hand, making Duterte feel the pressure of China's physical, even military presence in his waters, as well as probably blandishments that will be provided in terms of economic inducements and trade arrangements and the like, don't you think?
Clearly, Beijing will try to draw the Philippines away from the U.S., and Duterte will be a willing conspirator in that. But we got to remember that Duterte, of course, is the president, but he's not the only person in Manila. There is a security establishment, there is a military, which are very pro-American, and if what Duterte does leads to the loss of Philippine territory, then he's probably out as president. We saw this with Joseph Estrada, another tough guy Philippine president, who, you know, made a mistake, and soon we saw crowds in the street in Manila forcing the president out. I think the same thing could happen to Duterte. So he's walking a very thin line, and he's got to remember that he can develop strong relations with Beijing and Moscow, but he can't lose an inch of the Philippine territory, because if he does that, then I think it's lights out for him.
Speaking of this whole pattern of Chinese behavior of trying to obtain strategic advantage through commercial relationships and investment and transactions. One of the things that I just wonder, Gordon, do you agree that basically China is getting away with what amounts to economic warfare, really in advancing its strategic objectives, as long as they operate under the guise of these kinds of commercial enterprises? And should, if that's the case, we be looking hard at what's going on here?
Clearly, China's been waging economic warfare against the United States in various forms for more than a decade. And now it's changed, as Roger Robinson suggests. There are investments that Chinese state enterprises and others make into the United States that are strategic. And we're talking about a large amount of money, because last year there was perhaps $1 trillion of net capital outflow. That's according to Bloomberg. And some of that was strategic. A lot of it, of course, was capital flight, which is basically Chinese leaving their own society. So there's a number of different motives going on here. But clearly, we have to be concerned, because every time China invests in a technology company, we have to be concerned that this is not a commercial transaction, but is indeed an attempt to take technology from the United States and use it against us. So we need to be much more vigilant in what Beijing is doing, because there is so much money coming out of China. We need to sort out the good and the bad.
Yeah, and I guess what I was trying to get at is, in addition to that piece of the problem, which you're right to call attention to, Gordon, the extent to which China, through, for example, trying to buy, I guess, half of the electric grid of southern Australia, or putting nuclear power plants in the United Kingdom, or taking over, if they can, facilities that we have used for many years in the Azores, or building port facilities in Djibouti, and all kinds of other commercial arrangements along the coasts of Africa. I mean, all of these things seem to have, when you look at them through a national security lens, a strategic purpose, not just, you know, commercial plays. And if so, do you sense that we are really falling down, we in the West, not just here in the United States, in terms of our understanding that that's the character of what China's up to, let alone doing things that might impede it?
Well, the examples you mentioned clearly are attempts by Beijing to use money for strategic purposes. And we got to remember that China is building what they call, you know, string of pearls, which are military or dual-use facilities. And the one that is most important in my mind is the Azores. Here is a case where the United States Air Force is purposefully reducing the presence in the Azores, opening the door to China. So while the Chinese have bad intentions, we got to remember that in some cases, we open the door to them, and that's our fault, and we're not thinking strategically at all. This is just inexplicable, Frank, how we could let this happen, and yet it occurs. As I mentioned, not every Chinese investment is injurious to the United States. Some of them actually are quite helpful to us. But the ones you mentioned clearly are ones that should not be permitted if we have the opportunity to stop them.
There are reports that there are now hundreds of individuals who have recently been separated from the People's Liberation Army, protesting the fact that they will not be able to find jobs. Gordon Chang, do you anticipate that this is perhaps the leading edge of a much more serious problem for the Chinese Communist Party?
In the last few days, demobilized soldiers in their fatigues have been sitting in Beijing outside the Ministry of National Defense protesting the lack of jobs. We need to put this in context. The ongoing reorganization of the People's Liberation Army contemplates a reduction in force of 300,000. This is putting people into the Chinese economy that cannot absorb them, and so this situation is viewed by alarm in Beijing, as we can see by censorship of news reports, is a real indication that the Chinese economy is not able to support the ambitions of the generals and admirals.
We'll be watching this closely. Gordon, your help in doing so is greatly appreciated, as is all the work you do at the Daily Beast, Forbes.com, World Affairs Journal, and of course with us. Keep it up, my friend. We'll talk with you soon. We will talk with the rest of you again, I hope, tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.